Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So just segueing from beautiful Sarah Holmes' Herbal Highway, honoring Rosemary for remembrance. Yes, may we remember, and the announcement about the upcoming talk by Michio Kaku, who feels that humans must leave the planet at some point. And we say, not before cleaning your room. No, nobody leaves the planet until we've cleaned the room, and it's not just humans. What a lonely idea. All right, now back to us. So it is the new moon. It is the honoring of the Arctic seal and all life. We are welcoming the return of marine acoustician Michael Stocker, wonderful scientist, jazz musician, with a bevy of wondrous ocean recordings to guide us into intimacy with that which we must protect from the ongoing and relentless war on life, the present dangers and ways we can participate in protecting the ocean, and especially honoring the Arctic ringed seal and their small, large triumph, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, yay, upholding the Endangered Species Act on their behalf, reversing the lower court's decision that climate change was still too speculative. So Michael has a number of websites. One is ocean-noise.com. Crucial, and the main one is OCR.org. So just another way of introducing Michael, I like Sir Herbert Reed reminding us only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. And so here we are just moments after the eclipse new moon in Aquarius, which times Chinese New Year tomorrow, and we gather to set a desirable template whereby our rogue species may re-engage with the larger community. And Michael Stocker really is one of my favorite humans on the planet, really is an ambassador. I think as though the ocean creatures themselves put on a human costume and walked ashore to be ardent artistic advocate and guide us to be so as well. Welcome, Michael.
Delight to be here. I'm really honored to share this airtime with you again.
That's great. And you are in our KPFA Mothership studios, and I am outside D.C. We are, again, for 22-plus years with this show, attempting to weave symbolically what Washington and California represent. So there we go. So yes, the Arctic seal. I just thought of that because you've often played for me and many others, you know, the wonderful sound of the Arctic seal. And I thought we might start just by describing the Arctic seal and the role they've just played with the Ninth Circuit Court.
Well, the ring seal was the one that was kind of up on the sights of the current administration. And somebody's probably calling here. That's not them. That's somebody else. the oil saturated administration we have is really attempting as best as it can to try to sweep away any impediment to their survival, but it is definitely a survival. They're kind of against the ropes right now, and the ring seal was one of those because they're getting ready to start drilling again up in the Arctic, and the area that they're interested in, the ring seal, is a habitat for the ring seal. So they figured if they could take the ring seal off the endangered species list, that then they would be able to have their way with the ring seal habitat. Fortunately, the Ninth Circuit Court, in their wisdom, said that really nothing had changed to change the status of the ring seal. In fact, it's probably even more endangered because of the meltback of the ice. These animals they call them ice seals for a reason. They depend on ice for their breeding and haulouts. And if the ice is not there, these are animals that are not going to adapt very well to hauling out on sand. It just doesn't work that way. The ice is over areas of abundant food stocks for them, and they would not be able to kind of haul out through the particularly shallow Chukchi Sea to find food and then bring it back to their offspring and what have you. So as the ice melts back, the ice seals, the ring seal, and I'm going to play a little bearded seal as well, are up there, are threatened. And the Ninth Circuit Court said, yep, that's nothing's changed on that. So these people are flummoxed again, I guess.
And then just from the Center for Biological Diversity, yay them, from whom I heard about the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, sane judgment. But they, you know, the bearded, ringed, and spotted seals, and they say really what you just said too, but the ice, the prime habitat for bearded, ringed, and spotted seals, is projected to decline by at least 40% by mid-century. There's a lot of mid-century dire prognosis. The ocean will be more full of plastic than fish by 2050 if we don't change our mind. Our ally David Grimes had chimed in saying, well, the permafrost is not stable, which also makes drilling untenable because you can't have ice roads. And the oil companies know this. And so we go, oh, the thing that's threatening life is the thing that might prevent the other thing from more threatening life. I mean, so would we ask the permafrost to hang in there to be able to support the seals but not the trucks?
Well, the permafrost story, unfortunately, is a little more complicated. I love the idea that the trucks would not be supported by the, right, the mushy marshland up there, the bogs. But, of course, as the permafrost thaws out, so does the methane get released that has been in suspension in that frozen tundra for such a long time. So it doesn't bode well systematically, but it's a nice idea. It's kind of like I heard yesterday, and this is, you know, honoring those poor kids who lost their lives again to a foolish oversight on the part of our governors. But apparently when Obama was president, gun sales were going like crazy. It's like only 3% of the population were buying all these guns. But now the gun industry has a thing called the Trump slump. And Remington, their sales went down 90% in the last year. They're filing for bankruptcy. So It's an interesting feedback loop that, you know, it's kind of because it's in this positive feedback loop zone, a positive not being a quality but a characteristic, we are not sure exactly how it's going to play out. And I guess this is where the trickster has the most fun, right?
Well, may it be so. Trickster, yeah, nature's resilience that likes against all odds, is very engaged with this new moon that times the Chinese New Year tomorrow. Everything is proffering a fresh chance. Yes. So do you want to, because I remember the bearded seals from many of your recordings, but you guiding us all into intimacy with the Arctic, going, it is so alive, and that intimacy, it's not empty, especially the oceans, which is your special domain, your true home, I think. So, yeah, so however you want to guide us into this amazing sound that they make.
Well, one of the things that we find is that the Arctic is dark, and the Antarctic has got some darkness, too. So during the dark periods, a lot of animals up there over the eons have evolved to take advantage of sound. And so some of the sounds that come out of there, whether it's the ring seal or the bearded seal or the belugas or the bowhead whales, are incredibly complex. And later on in the show, I'll give out a link to a whole week of Arctic sounds taken in April of 2011. And it is just an amazing cacophony of animals throughout, around the clock, making the most amazing sounds. But just to try to isolate the sounds themselves, I have a little short ring seal, which I'll play right now and see if we can get this up. So that's a short clip of a ring seal. Oops, we're going into the whale seal. That's another one. That's no bearded seal. That's good to listen to too. This is a nice one. Maybe I should take it back to the beginning because it's so good.
Oh yeah, take it back. This is my favorite sound. One of my favorite sounds in the world.
Go, boys. a bearded seal, and that is
But it's so amazing when it like a phaser, but better. It's like that's what I want my phaser to sound like. You know, with as Eddie Izzard says, many more settings on phaser just than rather than stun or kill. Sudden interest in life, sudden interest in botany setting. Ah, I will kill you. Oh, look at the ocean. So how do these mammals make such a sound that is so, you know, otherworldly?
That remains a bit of a mystery. Bubbles don't come out of their nose when they do this, so they are modulating sacs of air, little bladders inside their vocal tract area, and it's a very complex set of muscles, and it's as you hear, the sound is very phase complex. It's got a lot of characteristics to it. What is it they're doing? I mean, these particular sounds are recorded during breeding season, so you would make a correlation that they might be associated with breeding displays or being beautiful. It's not necessarily known whether it's the males, the females, or both. In a lot of species, it's easy to tell that the males are the ones who are making the noise, but we don't know this for sure. So they may be just singing to each other in a beautiful time of their life where they're feeling frisky.
Right. No, that is one of the most glorious sounds. And then just words. We love words. So Arctic comes from the word for bear. It's bear land, and it should remain so. And so Antarctic means no bear. I mean, that's how you keep it straight. Anyway, I just wanted to chime in for the bears over there. And then just a wondering, for you to percolate, that part of my, democratic animism is, well, how shall we become more like the thing that we want to protect in order to protect it? How do we become more like water to protect water? How do we become more like wolves to protect wolves? And I know this is a big wondering, just to put on our altar of desirable wondering and mystery, how would we become more like the Arctic or more like the bearded seals? And just to put that out there, the quality of mystery, the quality of intelligence, the quality of joy, I suppose, but I'm just putting that out there in case, an answer floats up from the bottom of your psyche to the surface of your mind at any point about that idea of alliances. Because I'm, talking to the Bears Ears team too, going, what is the quality of intelligence of the whole Bears Ears, monument, may it be so? No, it's been open for uranium mining, but it hasn't happened yet. What would be the quality of intelligence? And this just goes back to, years ago when I was at Findhorn Community in the north of Scotland, and Donald First, who was looked very grown up in a suit and everything, head of the World Federalists, and he came and he said, the North Atlantic has a god, and in the Dag Hammarskjöld meditation room at the UN, there are spirits that come to try and help humans. I go, what a great thing for a guy in a suit to say. I just love that anything that has a name has a god or a presiding intelligence with whom we might cahoot. So I'm just putting that over there to your science mystic self.
Yeah, well, I mean, the animism, everything is alive in the various phases, and so there's an identity with that, but a relationship. I mean, the Native Americans have a homotakuyasin, which means that we are all related. It is kind of an exaltation of our belongingness. So when we listen to the elegant songs of the seals, for example, or those kind of mysterious whoops of the bowhead whales, it's an inspiration. I mean, these animals are, it's a gesture of life. It's not somebody wagging their finger or pounding on desks. And I think for myself, particularly in these dire times, to not fall into the trap of frustration or anger, because I can be as angry as I want and it's not going to change anything but what's inside of me. So listening to these seals, listening to the belugas, and just it's an exaltation. It's a gesture of belonging, and I think that that's a good starting place, as opposed to getting into kind of a frump wagging of fingers, pounding on desks mode, which doesn't help anything.
Right. Well, we want the kind of Mars arousal to turn into desire to be effective and desire, you know, so anger first, but don't stay there, keep going, you know, and, you know, I want to come back to your recordings and your guiding, but one of the things that's dear to your heart that I had the great honor of accompanying you once, twice, you know, is to the lagoon, San Ignacio Lagoon, where the gray whales have done this amazing thing, which is having been persecuted and their young killed and all kinds of things, they then... Even the hard-nosed scientists say they forgave the humans and wanted to make contact, which they do, and it's spectacular and moving, and we need these gazes of, you know, across species, just and I often use that to our team of progressives, going, you know, let's follow the lead of the gray whales that, having been persecuted and horrible things, they nonetheless wanted to open the hearts of the humans. That, you know, that great story that when Mitsubishi was going to open their lagoon, their breeding lagoon, you know, for a salt mine, you know, and I think it was Pancho Mayoral or the team of fishermen took the president of Mexico and his wife and child out into the lagoon, and I think it was Pancho who said the whales knew what they had to do. He said they'd never been so charming, and the wife of the president and the child were weeping, because you weep with the beauty and kinship of it, and the president of Mexico canceled the plan. But I like that, you know, it's like the whales did not come up and go, you running dog lackeys for imperialist colonialism. No, they were like, we're just going to open your heart so wide that you can't do harm.
That was a real amazing episode in that whole trajectory, and that these animals now, I mean, we're understanding that play is not just a foolish distraction. It's a very important part of all of the natural histories of all living beings, and you could even say that plants play a little bit. Those animals down there, it's quite clear when the babies and the mamas come up to the boats, they are playful. And, you know, even though the baby weighs a mere 2,500 pounds, is 12 to 15 feet long, it's still just cute as a button as they just play and goof off. So it opens your heart, you know, an important lesson to learn, you know, that.
And they wink.
They wink.
they wink and duck down and then spray you in the face. It's interspecies dating, you know, really just so charming. And again, you know, melts our heart back into, you know, David Grimes is the original dignity of our child heart, going, right. And that's really, you know, on this new moon, after an eclipse that we didn't see, but we can feel it, which is a kind of end, poof, you know, and we got to, you know, and the horrific things that were going on yesterday and for a long time, going, woof. And then it really is our radio magic capacity to set a new template for the largest definition of community possible. And I know that, you know, you want to guide us into further intimacy with fabulous recordings, which are such a treat, and then to offer us things we can do, ways we can participate to align ourselves with our ocean kin and with life itself. Yeah, wherever you want to go next.
Yeah, well, great. I mean, as I mentioned, these Arctic and Antarctic areas that are dark have an amazing repertoire of communication, and one of my favorite critters, known as the canaries of the sea, are the beluga whales. And these animals have probably the most complex auditory processing systems, and ability, both in terms of how they synthesize the sounds and how they make the sounds. I mean, these animals can mimic human voices it's a kind of a sad story, but there's a captive beluga down in Spar Wars, which is a Navy test facility down in San Diego. But this animal was mimicking the sound of the underwater hailers. Now, these are community animals, so one of the thoughts is they just wanted to have a conversation with somebody intelligent and thought, well, if these people are talking with this strange, grossly sounds, I'll try to make that. And it was pretty amazing. But their usual sounds are more akin to this here, which I will play. And I have other recordings which I can play. Maybe I'll just do that right now. I mean, it's a good thing to do. So that was just a collection of them in their kind of, lazy Sunday afternoon mode. This next collection is from their cooperative hunting. So they're strategizing with each other. And there's about 20 of them in this group. And we'll hear this. Yeah. So
right.
And this, they don't just stop at 20 seconds like I do. This goes on for a long time. And in fact, those guys are these particular ones that were recorded. They're in the Cook Inlet and then they're up in the Beaufort Sea area. They basically are community animals. They group in groups of anywhere from 20 to the ones in the Beaufort up to 1,000 will be kind of hanging out with each other. And the sound of that is just something. It's ethereal, doesn't even begin to explain it. It's just so right. Rich and around the clock. But there we have some Arctic recordings on one of our websites, on our OCR.org website. And I've shortened it to a bit.ly so everybody can get it easily. It's www.bit.ly/Arctic Soundscapes. Our soundscape singular. So try that out. And there's basically a whole week of sounds. And we were translating that because the recordings came to us through Cornell. And we had a whole week of this stuff. And we needed to translate it to put it into kind of video form so you could see the spectrograms and have interact with it a little bit. So for quite a few weeks during our office hours, we were listening to these things. And, it's really an amazing way to settle into your surroundings. But every once in a while, some wacky sound would come. It's like, whoa, what was that sound? And those are the mysteries.
Well, and you know who else loves those sounds? Dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Well, or wolf dog, my late great wolf hybrid, Captain Moondog, Wolfie. I just remember walking along the ocean when he was quite young, and he was like, oh, huh? And he was leaping and wanted to go into the sea, and he could clearly hear what I could not, and then the dolphins arrived, but he could hear them, and he wanted to be with them. And again, I love Terence McKenna, saying, when life begins to poke its head out of the sea and go, ooh, can some of us do this? Can we make our way into gravity? Like, oh, it's a big thing. And Terence says, life always says, you betcha, right? But I love the sounds, and I think it's great to play the sounds that you're playing for us, for our animal kin, because dogs, cats, they like this. I want to underline, a wonderful phrase you just used, yearning for conversation. And we are yearning for conversation, as you say. It's so, and what you just played of the beluga whales, it's like they're strategizing, they're hunting. But that's also very what we would, again, misname as kind of electronic or Star Trek-ish sounds, but they're not, and maybe it's Star Trek got it from them more than the other way around, but yeah, fabulous. And we yearn to participate in there was an amazing article some years back about captive, unfortunately, dolphins in England who, when they were sleeping, began speaking whale. And I read this article, and Stella Coyote, in the middle of the night, in her sleep, let out this huge wolf cry, which is very different from Coyote. And I go, ooh, maybe when we're sleeping, we speak each other's languages in some mysterious form, this language of kinship. But yeah, no, yes, feel free to festoon us with this festival of chorusing and kinship that you have, however you want to guide whatever next recording you want to play.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of us think or were raised to think that the ocean was a silent place, largely because we don't hear very well underwater, but we actually don't hear because we're adapted to hearing in air. A lot of other animals in the ocean are not so limited, and so there's all kinds of sounds that are made. I'm sure people have heard the songs of the humpback whale, but you know, one of the sounds that intrigues me is the sound of the carpenter fish, which I shall play here. The carpenter fish is actually a sperm whale, and those clicking that they do is a chorusing that they hang out together and they click like that. It's or bang around. It kind of sounds like a bunch of journeymen on Friday afternoon getting ready.
Well, yeah, they're building a woodshed.
Yeah, so and some of these sounds, I mean, the repertoire of sounds that dolphins have, which are, that Moondoggy could hear, but we cannot. It's outside of our auditory spectrum. There's amazing things they do with that sound. And while we hear it just as a series of clicks and pops, and even if you slow the sound down a little bit, it is something that really just sounds like clicks and pops, but there's a time domain component of this. So when they bounce their sonar off of something, the distorted signal that comes back gives them a very accurate representation of what that thing is. You know, if it's a fish, they know where the soft parts are and the tasty parts and the bony parts. And but they've understood in the past decade or so that dolphins can eavesdrop on each other, meaning that one animal will kick a sound out and the other animal will respond to it and know what to do. But there's not much of a leap from there if they can reconcile each other's biosonar signals that one might be able to project a sound image to the other. And that they would have conversations in these spatial-temporal contexts. That's not like language that we speak, which has these, you know, memory pegs to words that have origins, that have a history behind them, but rather what is going on right now. And, you know, they've only spent the last 30 million years evolving to that. So being able to sort it out beyond a speculative context is going to be challenging for us humans who have fairly linear constructs.
Well, yes, and we will honor, you know, after our break, you know, we will go human rudeness about sound and then, well, the exquisiteness. But our listeners are eager for you to say the bit.ly link again.
It's bit.ly/Arctic Sound or Arctic Soundscape, SOUNDSCAPE, singular.
So it's bit.ly, B-I-T
period, L-Y.
L-Y.
/ Arctic Soundscape.
That's excellent. So yes, I know all of these. Well, again, it's nutrient, it's food, the diversity, the wonderful, the conversing. Remember, wonderful word, converse. Con is with, versus turn. We're all in a giant conversation, all conversing, and we do yearn for humans to rejoin this conversation and with you as guide. So our wonderful guest today is our great ally, Michael Stalker. He will be still with us after the break, and also his great website, OCR.org, which is Ocean Conservation Research, right?
Correct.
OCR.org is a great place to go, and we will be right back after this very short break.
Shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chiny, 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 come blow my chiny home. Ooh, change. Jenny, Jenny, come blow my Jenny horn. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and joining you, as I often do, from just outside Washington, D.C., where even now we are inching the ring of power into the crack of doom, and connecting with our guest, wonderful Michael Stocker, in the KPFA studios. His website is OCR.org, which is Ocean Conservation Research, and we are honoring the Arctic seal and all life, and now we dive back into that 30 million years of evolved conversation in the ocean. We, such latecomers as a species, and the human sounds that are so rude, because, of course, as you've been dedicated for so long, it's not only the exploration for, well, the oil drilling, but the exploration, the boom, boom, and then, of course, the Navy's low-frequency sonar, which is so cruel, so loud, so devastating to the eardrums and life of all creatures in the ocean. But I do love your primary dedication is the beauty and the intricate latticework of these species conversation in the ocean. We want to honor that primarily, but then, you know, we gotta also think of how rude humans are with their sound and their guns and their addiction to explosions. And I like that even some scientists are rethinking the Big Bang theory, and going, maybe it wasn't a Big Bang. Maybe it was a long unfurling curve, right? Maybe the Big Bang theory is again part of our boom, boom, you know. So, because as you do so many things, you're such a great Renaissance being, and I think you've, in conversations we've had in the past, we could have motors that were silent, couldn't we?
There are a lot of ways that we can adapt. We're used to kind of charging ahead and looking back at what we did, as opposed to thinking about what we could do. But, you know, you mentioned when I was playing the sound of the belugas, how much it sounded kind of like R2-D2, those types of synthesized sounds. One of the things that we've been working on is to basically try to adapt these sounds, our human sounds, our communication sonars, to sound more like natural sounds, in which case it wouldn't be quite as damaging. We could be better neighbors, in the phrase that you introduced me to. The idea of being a good neighbor in the ocean was like, that makes actually good sense. We're inhabiting similar space. Instead of colonizing it, we should actually inhabit it. And, you know, if we're talking about noise in the ocean, I mean, it's arguable, and I have a paper out on this, that 180, 200 years ago, before industrialized whaling really took hold, the ocean was a very noisy place. There were millions of whales all making noise all the time, and zillions and zillions of fish all grunting and snorting and flapping away. And so if you had dropped a hydrophone, had there been a hydrophone in 1820 and dropped it into the water, it would be noisier than it is right now. But all those animals, much like any healthy habitat, forest, ocean, kelp forest, they choose an acoustical niche that does not overlap the sound spectrum of other animals. So they use sounds for a particular purpose, and they use it within the context of where they live without interrupting each other. And, you know, it's like an orchestra. If you listen to a nice orchestral piece of music, you have the cellos and the basses down below, and you have the piccolos and the tambourines and glockenspiels up, you know, and these violins and violas in the middle. And it sounds healthy. And that is what a healthy habitat sounds like. We've been going in there with these huge, noisy, broadband, obnoxious sounds without regard to the impact. But that doesn't mean that in order for us to continue our engagement with the ocean, we have to continue being noisy that way. We could be noisy in different ways. We could maybe look at the acoustical niches that are available for the particular types of things that we want to do with it. Low-frequency sounds for long-distance communication and short-distance communication. I mean, what would be the difference or what would be the sacrifice by taking kind of beluga sounds and using that for communication sonar, for example, except the belugas are saying, what are you saying? Enunciate.
You know, what are you saying and why are you interrupting?
Yeah.
And then just back to, yes, if only humans had manners. That is our fervent wish, our radioelectronic magic to spiral, you know, expanded wisdom and tolerance into group mind, you know, humans having manners, and maybe something in, you know, that all of creation, except for humans apparently, you know, choose an acoustic niche that does not interrupt anybody else's conversation, right? And this is such an intriguing thing, you know, with humans with their cell phones interrupting everybody else's blah, 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 and then the deal went through and sell that, and, you know, just everywhere is kind of humans imposing. I think one of our criterion is our manner of relating as individuals in a species, an offering or an imposition. And as you're unfurling before us these wonderful complex lattice works of conversation that we are outside, we don't know, but wonder and curiosity would be really good, you know, and then we galumph, you know, or worse. But but it isn't the spiral technology that you know, I think someone in part of your team said, you know, with spiral motors, we could have cars and motorcycles that were relatively quiet, but people want that kind of compensatory, you know, rah rah.
I think we're getting over that actually, because now that our auditory seen as being so colonized by the little bleeps and blurts of telephones and whatever, I think we're becoming a little more conscientious of that people are maybe... the quiet cars that people are, the electric cars people are driving around in, I am seeing in certain places, there are usually in urbanized environments where people have a need to make an acoustical statement where, I mean, there was this bizarre, a fad down in Los Angeles area where somebody has designed this muffler that screams. And it's a very bad idea in this urban environment. But, there's no, apparently right now, no regulations against that. That somebody is that alone in their space that they need to hear themselves make that kind of noise to verify their existence is a sad statement.
We have an abundance of those, but take us back to the Mother Ocean, increasingly important, and I think the work that you do, may it be increasingly recognized. I like the guiding, you know, the sky earth story. Venus has entered the sign of her exaltation, which is Pisces, which is the ocean, and Venus, of course, emerges, you know, many pictures of Aphrodite emerging from the ocean, and Venus will emerge as the evening star somewhere around February 20th, according to our latitude, you know, in the sign of her exaltation, lined up with Neptune, dreams, vision, imagination. And we go, okay, well, everything to do with the ocean and that we're all in this dream together, you know, is rising up into prominence, and issues about water, which are the most crucial. We know Cape Town may be shutting off its taps and have no water, the first city in the world to have to do so. So it's beginning. I mean, the real crisis effect, it's been here for a long time, but it will look sudden to some people. But I think at the same time, because, you know, as you are poet-scientist, you know, for as long as human memory extends, human imagination has been tied to the ocean. And that's why we say, you know, what species would poison the collective water in the ocean? We go, well, a species that had forgotten its myth of conscious kinship and imaginative intimacy.
I think we can save ourselves. I mean, we haven't really been that mean for that long. I mean, people
really
started peeing in water in the 11th century.
You know, that's true.
It was a lousy idea, and it took, unfortunately, and there was enough abundance at that time. So it was a dissociation that occurred. And that was really, you know, in Western Europe. And the other places in the world, they didn't start doing this literally till we started colonizing them and forcing, you know, flush toilets on them. So we're really not that far away from being able to revive our relationship to this one body of water that our planet is, which we are part of. It's hard because there are those people who are having a tantrum right now in the fossil fuel industry who somehow take some perverse pleasure in despoiling that body of water of which we are all part of. And but, you know, we have to behave like adults in this situation, because at some point in time, you know, they're going to, their ball's going to deflate. They're going to lose hold of the tiller. They're going to, you know, run into something. They're going to skin their knees. And then we're going to be the adults saying, okay, we told you so. But to run in fear right now, I mean, as I am fond of saying in these conversations, is that we have to lead with love. Otherwise, we're going to be herded by fear. Super important, right, in these times, because fear is being wielded with like a cudgel over us, and to be fearful the next antic that comes along may not be the most effective response.
Excellent. Well, guide us. Can you guide us back into the ocean where we may listen in on the conversation happening all around us?
I will. You know, one of the things that I've been noticing, okay, so there's a number of different families of whales. We all know the humpback whale, and we had a conversation about the gray whales that are coastal whales. And then, of course, there are all the baleen whales. There's about five different families. A bowhead and right whale are kind of cousins to each other. And there's a whole collection of whales we call the Rorquals. These are the large blue whale, largest animal that we know has ever lived on Earth as an independent species. But they also include Sei whales and Brutus whales and Minke whales and fin whales. So there's five different species of this particular Rorqual. And they are different than the humpbacks. The humpbacks sing these amazing songs. They're, you know, kind of like stories, if you will. They might last 40 minutes to an hour. It's a cyclical tale. The Rorquals pulse. And depending upon the species, the size, you know, they'll pulse at various frequencies. So the smallest of these are minke whales. And I've been kind of coming to understand that this pulsing they do is a way of chorusing, kind of like crickets. Crickets will pulse together, and that's a way of establishing your relationship to your community. And the way the crickets do it, you say, well, how does this happen that these animals are making this noise, their own noise? How do they synchronize with an animal that's 10 feet, 15 feet away, because they wouldn't be able to hear it? Well, what ends up happening with the crickets is when they make that crick sound, there's a neurological blanking that shuts their hearing down. So when they're cricking, they can't hear anything. So instead of focusing on a target that's a live target they need to hear, they're focusing on a basically a hole in the sound. So when they're synchronized, they don't hear anything, and it makes it easier to synchronize with all the other critters, all the other crickets in their community. Why do they do this? Because if I come close to one of the crickets in the community and it slows down a little bit, all the other guys go, oh, something's going on over there. So they use this as a community ear to hear each other. Hmm. So I've been hearing kind of a lot of this same stuff in the Rorquals that pulse. And I'm going to play a couple of minkes, and you'll hear this first one kind of pulsing away at a certain tempo, and then all of a sudden the second one comes in, and they both accelerate, but you're going to hear a double pulse, and the double pulse is because they're both a long way away from the hydrophone, and that second pulse is really the time it takes the sound to travel. The difference between the two different. So it's kind of, you'll hear this, and here it comes. Is that loud enough, Erica? Okay, we're going to run that again because that was too good. Let's go back to the beginning. Okay, second one. And when you speed this up to in a time domain that we can hear, we can understand, it will sound like crickets, strangely enough, and I'll play that very sound, or sound like cicadas more than crickets. So, minkies, there we go. So,
I can feel that in my skin.
Yeah, it can. It's a very ethereal but almost an archetypal sound, you know, and you hear this phasing between them, which is this kind of their time domain changes in response to the surroundings. So I'm trying to sort out that first one, you know, to try to get a real... The thing about recording in the ocean is that if you don't see it happening, the sound is a sound that is not scientifically verifiable to, I mean, so we know this is a minke, that's fine, but what are they doing with that to try to get that pulsing to understand? You'd need another hydrophone out there. So words, combing the literature, trying to get some verification. That particular sound was recorded in the Stellwagen Bank, where they had an array of hydrophones for quite a few years there. And a lot of amazing sound studies came out of that. That was Lila Hatch and Chris Clark were out of Cornell. Lila Hatch with NOAA were running that program. We're trying to get a set of hydrophones off the South Farallones right now. We have a lot of blue whales in this area, and they're unfortunately kind of coming in conflict with the ships. And the blue whales get struck by ships. There is a thought that they are really not used to anything larger than them in the ocean moving. And so their response to moving ships is one of, you know, a last minute startle, but sometimes it's too late. So working with Dr. Ellen Hines at the Romberg Tiburon Center and UCSF, we're trying to get some hydrophones there where we can actually look and watch the interactions between the ships and the blue whales and find out if there's some way that, you know, some modality, you know, is there time of day, is it when moon cycles or tidal cycles or whatever.
Or if the ship could announce itself going, big lumbering dingbat whale of a boat coming, big lumbering dingbat whale.
The problem is that these animals are not adapted or habituated even to knowing that the noise is the way the blue whales respond when they hear the noise is they go to the surface, which is unlike the humpback whales which dive down because they're spooked. These blue whales don't spook, so there's something about them. And you know, these animals are, they have not shown the type of sociability that the humpback whales or the pilot whales or the dolphins. I mean, they are really just built for speed and long-distance travel and communication. So we don't really even know, you know, what is their, if you will, their psychology. Is there some, you know, the challenge of putting warning signals in the front of a boat is all of a sudden we have more noise in the ocean.
Right. So, well, it is like some of the hybrid cars putting little tiny whistles on the front so that the deer can hear them.
The deer can hear them.
So these are all, well, that's why consulting with Michael Stocker is, you know, on sound manners is kind of crucial. So as you weave us in, but also I'm cognizant of you want to also, we want to critique and honor the beauty and complexity and sink to our knees in humility at what humans are doing, and then you have ways we can participate in protecting the ocean, right? You have those, Doctor.
Yes. Well, right now, of course, we have a coup that has occurred. It's an industrial coup, and we saw this happening as the cabinet was being assembled by the current occupant of the White House, where 75% of the people he was assigning to various positions and key positions in government were from the oil industry. Now, we were warned about this by Alexander Hamilton in the Federalist Papers, number 76, and by Madison in number 10 about the idea of concentrating. So 76 talks about the assignment of the cabinet and the role of the Senate to basically advise and consent. The consent part was really important, and those guys failed on that. From a constitutional standpoint, we have a constitutional crisis where the Senate is not doing its job And we were warned about this. Number 10 is basically Madison talking about factions taking over the efforts of governance in such a manner that it would not serve the public good. And we, both of those things have happened. These guys, by the way, Madison was 24 years old when he wrote that stuff. These guys are brilliant. Youngsters, you know. Paying heed to these people who had thought this through, and they argued a lot about it. They were some smart cookies down there. But we've now got ourselves kind of caught up in this. It's not going to last forever because it's instable. The oil men are having a tantrum. It's their last hurrah. They have their hand in the tiller. They're attempting to strip back all impediments to their progress. But if you look at what they're doing, it doesn't indicate they are in good health. Oil has been hovering around $50 a barrel. It's not really enough for them to be as profitable as they'd like to be. And the cost of energy from other sources, sustainable sources, is coming down significantly. I mean, I have friends who are now running their old house and their car, everything on solar right now, and it's not costing a pile of money. So these guys are shaking in their boots about it, and they're having a tantrum at the same time. They are stripping away things that just save them pennies just so that they can have their way. And right now, there's a proposal out, and it's up for public comment, that 90% of the outer continental shelf is being handed over to, or they're proposing, Bureau of Ocean Energy Management is proposing handing the management of the outer continental shelf over to the oil companies while stripping back safety regulations and environmental protections that we have relied on. And over the past 40 years, they have been quite profitable even under these regulations. So if they're afraid of those regulations, that they can't make it a go of it right now, then obviously there's something awry in their accounting system. So it is open for public comment right now. I have a colleague, Richard Charter, who's an ocean hero of long standing. He's put up a website, saveourcoastsingular.org, and that will give you a window into the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, or regulations.gov, which is essentially the comment area that we can kind of enter our comments into the various proposals that are going forth right now. He's provided some text, but really what we need to do is provide individual, clear comments from our own perspective, because every one of those comments counts. And when you use somebody else's preformatted text, your numbers count, but the perspective does not. So it's a lot more weighted. If you just go
so,
and say,
so you think somebody's reading all those things?
Oh no, they have machines reading it.
Oh, right, okay.
So when it goes to court, which it probably invariably will, then they start pulling out. Because I'm in the middle of writing a critique right now. It'll probably end up being a 35-page critique.
Does the machine laugh when we say bon mots and witty things?
How could you flummox the machine?
our time is precious and waning. So saveourcoast.org is good, and we have another 3 minutes or so. So I love to feast in the recordings if you have more ocean intimacy to guide us into, and also anywhere you want to go with what we can do. But here we are.
Yeah. Okay.
It's
well,
an infinite amount of time, but also
Let's see what I've got coming up on the. The more minke whales. This is an individual expressing himself.
Okay.
Minke. Minke whales are about 25 to 30 feet long, and they're cute as bugs' ears. They jump a lot out of the water. They're big, cute. Here's another one. It's another minke here. Yeah, so these are just cessations. Oops, there's that guy again. He keeps on going. Well, I like that. Maybe that's a 40-second. Just listen to this again.
Yeah. I so love that. No, that's great. And also, I so love that we can give them a radio voice. I wonder, when's the last time that Bearded Seals had a radio show? Ah, that's great. But I love broadcasting their voice on our technology. I think that's a great thing to keep going. And we are particularly honoring those Bearded Seals, the wonderful, because they are, you know, their home is in danger, but they did just win a good court decision, which is holding off the drilling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals because of the ring seals. So here we are. Okay, we've got another minute or so. Anything else you want to delight us with that we may feel kinship and wonder?
Well, I want to thank the Center for Biological Diversity for running that particular court case. That was really good of them. All hands on deck. But I think super important is to really luxuriate in the sounds of our surroundings and use that to guide ourselves to behave in civil ways in otherwise what seems to be uncivil settings. It's surprising what happens when you do that.
Okay. Well, we're on our way out all too soon. I wouldn't mind another dose of Ring Seals to outro us, and I would thank Erica Bridgman, our wonderful board op, and you, Michael Stocker, our wonderful guest, and OCR.org is your website, and then ocean-noise.com is another good place to go for information ongoing. But can we ride out on the...
This is a Weddell seal. This is an Antarctic animal, but you'll see some similarities here.
Oh, God.
Yeah, another.
That's
here.
Great. That's great. Okay, and then maybe just we ride on out. Erica will segue us into our closing music, but maybe just a little bit of the Ring Seal or whoever you want.
These are Weddells. Oh. That's an off into the horizon sound for you.
It is an off into the horizon. Thank you so much, Michael Stocker.
Thank you, Carolyn. What a delight again.
It is a delight. All right, may us humans we join with admiration and wonder back into the conversation taking place all around us. And thanks again to Michael Stocker for guiding us into the ocean once again. Woof, 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 and we will reconvene next week. Thanks, team.